James's letter is always a bit hard-hitting. He doesn't pull any punches. It's a very practical book. That's what hits us. It's very pragmatic. It's about the material things of our lives, you know, the physical actions that we do. It's about what we do, what we say. He very much talks about the works of faith, you know. And we can be mistaken for thinking that that is what he wants us to focus on and to look at. He wants us to live a good life, to do the right thing. Because it sounds like that's what he's talking about. And indeed, in that reading I've just given, he's talking about a very practical thing. Two people come into church, one's in fine clothes, one's in poor clothes. What are you meant to do with that situation, that very material, physical, practical, externalized example? What are you meant to do with it? But James is not really interested in the practical, physical, and materialistic. He's actually more interested in the inner stuff of faith. He is still interested in the heart stuff. We've been following, since last week, Jen Hatmaker's book, Seven. And Simon did a good introduction of it last week, talking about her fast, if you like, from food. For those of you who weren't here, Jen Hatmaker, an American author, set herself a challenge for 7 months, taking each month for 7 aspects of her life and sort of limiting them or simplifying that area of her life. She starts with food, which Simon talked about last week. Talk is available online if you want to listen to it. And she limits herself for a month to only eating 7 ingredients. And to try and get her to reflect on how much food, what's going on with her diet and with her food and the consumption that she is caught up in, particularly in the United States of America, but equally here in the UK. The second month, which we are looking at now in this week, is her relationship with clothes. So she limits herself for a month. She only wears 7 items of clothing. You get the 7 motif coming through. That does not include pants and socks. So just before you're concerned. And in her introduction to the book, she explicitly says that the way she wrote it was she just wrote diary entries as she went along. And the book that is now published is not a sort of reworking, is not her looking back over it and projecting onto that situation to give us things to reflect on. All she's doing is giving the diary entries. So what we get when you read the book is a sense of someone on a journey. And so we shouldn't be disappointed to think that the first few chapters, she doesn't really reflect that much. Or, if you're like me, reading the first few chapters, I kind of was there going, Jen, can't you see what's happening? The reality is, most of us get caught up and distracted with the very material, physical parts of our life. And it takes us a long time, much longer, to look back and to see what spiritually was going on in a particular situation. Because we're distracted with the chaos of our external world. The world is just throwing us a whole load of situations that we have to deal with. And it's not until that they've all settled down that we look back and go, huh, I wonder if that's what was going on emotionally, spiritually, etc., in my inner life. So the first few chapters, Jen really focuses on the physical, material, practical part of this challenge that she has. So in the food section, she talks a lot about her wrestles with what food she's allowed to eat, what food she's not allowed to eat, and she gets all caught up in the nuts and bolts of what is prohibited and what is permissive. And as Simon said last week, it's not really about that. And I think Simon, correct me if I'm wrong, but Simon's sort of preaching to Jen Hatmaker in the past. Because by the end of the book, Jen Hatmaker is saying exactly that. She's looking back to the time when she was looking at food, going, I don't know what I was talking about. Because I think this is what God was doing in that situation. It wasn't anything to do with the food. There was something else going on for me privately and personally, which I was hiding behind this sort of nuts and bolts of not eating food. Well, it's the same with clothes. She limits herself to 7 items of clothes. And she thinks it's about how much she's bought and how much she uses and all of that sort of stuff. But underlying it, and even certainly from the 3rd chapter, she's already reflecting back going, it wasn't about the clothes. It wasn't about how much money I spend. It's about my attitude and my relationship with clothes, with what I use clothes for. It's about my identity, my fundamentals, what makes me me. If we were following the lectionary, Lent would have begun this year with a reading from Genesis, the fall of humanity. The first temptation, if you like, that we see in the biblical narrative. A temptation which we fail to resist. And so sin enters the world, we make the mistake, we get separated from God and from one another and from creation. The rupture has happened because the first temptation happened because they had choice, we made the wrong choice, and so we face the consequences. Later on in that story, we hear the first sort of mention of clothing. The first clothing in the biblical narrative, Adam and Eve sew together fig leaves to cover themselves. Why? Why do they create clothes? Because they feel shame, guilt, regret. They feel bad about themselves. They suddenly see the darkness within, the monster that they have become, or that is potential within all of us. And instead of dealing with that, instead of going to their loving father, making the confession, restoring relationship with him, instead of dealing with it, their first response is to cover, to put on a mask, to put on a costume, to keep the performance going, and to live and to project what they want the world to see onto an external world, rather than dealing with the internal stuff. This chapter is not about clothing. It's about shame, guilt, those private things that you would like to hide. What are those things? And how do you cover them? And why do you cover them? We love to live in the external world. It's so much easier to deal with and to control the external world. Even if your external circumstances are really chaotic at the moment, it is far simpler to deal with that complication than to deal with the stuff in here. And too often, we think that when we're feeling wrong inside, what we need to do is change the outside bit, to change the external circumstance. I've told you many times, I struggle to find joy in the world sometimes. I struggle to find hope. I get grumpy really easily. I get cynical. I get bitter. I get angry. I get upset. All of those things. And my first instinctive response, which I know, is to run away. Or to change the situation. Or to just to make a change in my life. Because, do you know what? Everything's going wrong in the world, and I just need to sort of, you know, in order to deal with all that sort of chaos and that pain and that turmoil that I'm feeling, I'm going to change my outside world. The truth is, if I don't deal with that inner stuff in one context, I'm going to have to deal with it in all the other contexts that I go to. I can try and run. I can try and cover myself with clothing, with eating good food. I could buy lots of stuff to make me feel good. All of those things I could do, and it'll be short-lived, but sooner or later, the inner stuff has still got to be dealt with. It doesn't work like that. It works the reverse. If you're feeling awful about your external circumstance, the stuff in your world, the material stuff, the physical and the practical stuff, if that is causing you stress and chaos, I would say work on your inner stuff. Work out why it is that this is so upsetting for you. Why this situation is causing you trauma and pain and heartache. Because sooner or later you're going to have to face it in a different way, with a different symptoms, and you're going to have to deal with it in some way at some point. We can, in Lent, take on sort of quite practical things, pragmatic choices, Lenten disciplines of giving up chocolate or trying to control your road rage, whatever it is. And we can sort of get focused on that. We can start focusing on, it's about chocolate. It's about I shouldn't eat chocolate because chocolate's bad for me. Don't eat chocolate. Don't get angry when you're driving. Don't get angry. That's bad. That's naughty. So I'm going to try and cut that out. And I've got to try really hard to not be naughty and not to be bad and not to be terrible. And it's not about the chocolate. It's not about the other drivers. It is just a symptom. Why do you go to chocolate? What's your relationship with it? Why do you depend upon it so much? Why do you depend upon expressions of anger? Why do you turn to that so readily and so easily? Why does that give you that kick, that adrenaline rush? Why is that? Who hurt you? What hurt you? What shame caused you to clothe yourself with that mask? With that addiction? With that behavior and that activity? That is what Lent's about. About facing up to those things. Not so that you can go, I'm a terrible person, I'm awful, and oh, let me wallow and let me feel awful and let me beat myself up and suffer and sacrifice so much so that everyone knows how painful and regretful I am. It's not about that. You do it in order to appreciate God's goodness, love, mercy, and grace to you. If we were following the lectionary, Lent would have begun with a story in Genesis. First temptation, Adam and Eve, which they failed, brought sin and the rupture and all the pain and heartache that we now feel. That's how we would have started Lent. And in that story of the temptation, why is it that we always, always think it's about the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Why do we always think it's about what God told us not to do? But that's the problem. That's the heart of the story. God told us not to do something and we did that thing. So we are naughty and bad people. Why is it that we do that? What is it about humanity? Well, it's the sin that came from that. Because just before God says, don't eat the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, we so quickly forget that he said, take all this fruit from any tree in the garden. That is multiple, just generous abundance. All of creation is yours to play with, enjoy, delight in, receive, steward. Just enjoy it all. It's all yours. All I'm asking you is don't eat that one tree. Temptation was, why not that one tree? God, he's stingy. God, how dare he prohibit that one tree? Huh. It's just because he's scared. He's scared. He doesn't want to give everything to us. How twisted and distorted is that? But that's our response. And we're still doing it. In our Lenten discipline, we focus so much on what's prohibited, on what we shouldn't do, what's naughty, what's bad. Rather than to say, look at all the great things God has given us. Too often, human beings, certainly I do, focus on my lack and my failing, on what I'm not good at, what God has not blessed me with. And I beat myself up. I say how terrible I am, how awful I am to other human beings, what my mistakes, and I dwell upon them, and I need to work on those mistakes. I missed out on God saying, Ned, I've given you all of this. Blessing after blessing after blessing. Gift after gift after gift. This chapter is not about clothing. It's not about sacrifice. It's about connection with God. Because so easily we buy clothes, we use clothes to cover ourselves, to cover the pain and heartache, which God wants to bless us with healing with. In our culture at the moment, we have got so much blessing, and yet why is it we are still panic buying? Why is it that we are still storing up stuff in this world because we are afraid that we might need it in the future? Why is it we do that? Well, I can blame an external force. I can blame consumerist culture. I can blame that quite easily. It's all about them. The advertisers are telling me that I need. And so I fear that I need. So therefore, I focus on, well, I'm just going to buy the stuff that I need. Well, actually, I don't really need it. I've got loads of blessings. God's going to deal with that, as our gospel reading said. Do not worry about your clothes. I'm going to sort that out. Okay? It's not about clothing. It's not about food. Stop worrying about food, what you should eat. Stop worrying about how much you should eat, how little you should eat, what kind of food you should or should not have. Forget about that. It's not about that. It's not about what clothes are good, what clothes are bad. It's not about dividing each other up into you've got the right clothing because they're ethically sourced and blah, 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 and this is really cheap and actually this is recycled and all that stuff. It's not about that in the first instance. The first instance is sort out why you need those things. Why is it that you feel, before I deal with all this stuff that God wants to deal with, I've got to sort of just, I'm just going to make sure that I'm fed and I'm watered and I'm clothed and everything, and then I'll have a relationship with God. Fact is, you'll never get to your relationship with God because you'll never have enough food, you'll never have enough clothes, you'll never have enough. Forget about it. It's not about that. Lent is about saying, we are dependent upon God, but it's good because he is abundant and generous, loving and caring. Why is it that we don't hear that? What is it in your life that you don't want to hear God saying, I can deal with that? Why do you still cover up? Why do you still go to the addictive behaviors like me? Why is it we do that? Our culture is built upon that Gentile striving that was mentioned in the gospel reading. The Gentiles, those outside of God's kingdom at that point in the biblical narrative, they are the ones that strive constantly, need more, get more, have more, do more, all of that sort of stuff. Jesus is there going, don't, it's not about that. You're not going to be happy. Seek first God's kingdom, his love, his mercy, his goodness, his healing and his salvation. Once you've got your inner life sorted, the external stuff, the decision's made. That's not enforced. That's not a, and therefore you can only wear 7 items of clothing. You'll automatically only want to wear 7 items of clothing. It's not about that. But you will have a correct relationship with clothes because you'll no longer use them as a cover-up. You'll no longer use them to cover up your shame and to claim your identity because you wear the certain brand and that's your identity. You don't go to a certain restaurant to get your identity because your identity will be fixed in God. You won't be buying certain cars. You won't be getting certain jobs. You won't be constantly striving to get the right job so that people see you in the right way because you won't care, because you only care that God sees you with love. You are beloved. He is giving to you gifts and blessings and you are missing them. Just like me. I was on retreat just this week. I am already feeling God changing me in my life. Not because last week I only ate 7 items of food and I regret that there were too many carbohydrates, way too many carbohydrates. That wasn't what God was talking to me about. It wasn't about the food. It was actually about something completely different. It was about this giftedness. about why it is that I continue to face the same problems again and again and again. It's not a food isn't related to it, clothes not related to it, possessions aren't related to it. Not sure about social media, I'll see when we get to social media. But there is stuff in me which I really don't want God to touch because it's too painful. But I have forgotten that God is already doing it. He, if anyone is going to deal with it, he is going to deal with it. With love and tenderness, grace and mercy. This Lent, not about sacrifice. It's about appreciation of goodness. Not about giving stuff up or taking stuff up or beating yourself up. About letting your guard down to God. Of lying down in his presence. Receiving goodness. Dependence upon this good and generous God who is permissive in so many ways. Yes, prohibitive in some aspects, but only for our goodness and our blessing. That's what it's about. I'm going to invite the band to come up. The last time we played this song in church, I cried, but it was over a year ago now, so I think I'm all right. This song, for those of you who don't know, it was a song that I discovered a week after Sarah died. And the reason it always makes me cry, and the reason that it was such an anthem to me at that time, was because it expressed something that Sarah had in droves and I just vicariously lived through her with. And when she left, it was the lack and the absence that I felt most profoundly, which was seeing blessing and goodness, even though on the face of it, life was awful and terrible and everything was going wrong and nothing was going my way. Sarah was just able to pinpoint or live in blessing and abundance and grace and goodness. This song expresses that. So as we sing, maybe you just want to listen. As we sing and worship, I invite you to invite God in to these external circumstances, but to change your inner life so that you can see through God's eyes where he's at work, what he's capable of doing, what he's capable of giving to you. To deal with that stuff that causes you to see the world in darkness and shame and guilt and all that sort of thing. Let's worship God together, inviting him in prayer.